The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
It's time to turn the pages. It's time to type it right. It's time to get things started on the most booktational, inspirational Once Upon an Author show. Here's your host, Danielle M. Orsino. Yay!
The truth is out there. X-Files. No, this isn't a paranormal episode, or with the song you probably thought we were doing like CSI or something. No, it's none of those. This is the Christmas Eve edition, and I didn't want to do Jingle Bells, or I'm sure you guys are Mariah Carried out by now. So we're going to jump into unwrapping something a little bit special. I got a lot of questions. You guys have slid into the DMs and asked me some questions. So I thought tonight, as a little Christmas gift, I would actually answer some of them and try to lift the veil a little bit, no pun intended, on some of these questions. Now, I'm going to try to get to all of them. Some things I'm going to have to be vague on, either for legal reasons, hint, hint, or because they're future episodes. Some people actually also emailed and asked that their names not be revealed for one reason or another, so I'm going to respect that. And we're going to get into it. So my first question is, Danielle, will you be doing a read-along with the first book and the show? From Debbie, Bucks County, PA. First of all, thank you, Debbie. A read-along. I may do something like that where I've thought about it to kind of give everybody the behind the scenes of certain chapters. It's a great idea. And some of the chapters in the book definitely do have stories behind them. So to give you like a little tidbit hint, in the latest edition of Locked Out of Heaven, there's a chapter called Destiny, Thy Name is Los. And I always get choked up when I talk about this because it's Los's origin story. And I was told I couldn't put it in. The first and the second go around, people were like, nobody's going to care. But Los is inspired by my little Yorkie, Carlos. And a lot of the stuff about him, you know, nobody wanting him, him being sickly, is all true. And I felt like people still wanted to hear it. So I was always told, don't put it in. I put it in this one and I still get great responses. Like, I love hearing Los's backstory, whatever. And he's such a great little guy that I love putting stuff about him in. So I may do something where I'll do little things like that. So I'm thinking about it. But yes, there will be little chapter tidbits about specific chapters. And anything about Lowe's, I'm going to give you a backstory on. So don't worry about that. Danielle, you mentioned in the first episode showing the failures. What are your biggest regrets in this process? Anonymous. Oh boy, biggest regrets in this process. Oh my gosh, do you have a whole episode just to talk about that? I may have to. There are a lot. I've said this before. If you want to know what not to do in this process of being an author, come sit next to me. I have fallen for every scam, every pitfall, all of it. I have done it. I have fallen for it. You ready for this one? Life coaches for authors. Yeah, I fell for that one. Hook, line, and sinker, completely. One scam I fell for, I didn't even know I was falling for the scam until afterwards, until I got the bill. I didn't even know. You name it, I've fallen for it. My biggest regret overall, not trusting myself when I should have. I did that a lot. I said it before, I will say it again. Know when to fight and when to listen. There's a thin line between confidence and delusion. There are times you should be steadfast and confident in your work. And then there are times when you're delusional and you think you're the best. You have to know when to take the advice, when not to, and who to take it from. But my biggest regret is definitely not trusting myself and trusting people too much. believing, one, because I have a contract, they got to stick to it, or it's equal. It's never equal. And thinking they really had my best interest, or you know, we were going to work together. It was going to be symbiotic. You grow up very quick, and you do get a little jaded in this business. So not trusting myself and trusting too much, that's one of my biggest regrets in this process. Next question. Are the books very personal, and are there pieces of you in them? Anonymous. Yes, the books are very personal. There's a little bit of me in all of them. Like I said, Carlos is in them. My friends are in them. But I will tell you, the most personal one is going to be volume 2, Birth of a Succubus. Those books are probably my most personal books overall. I pulled more from real life for that series, for volume 2, than from volume 1. And it's not because volume 1 is the Fae and they've got wings or fins or whatever. It's because I did jump genres. If volume 1 is fantasy, volume 2 is urban fantasy paranormal. And as I said, you know, before a couple weeks ago, you know, it's based on my patient, the CIA, all that kind of stuff. But I did pull from actual personal experiences. And there's a couple scenes that are straight out of my life. One scene in particular, I pulled from my journal. And that's pretty much word for word in there. So I would say, yes, they're very personal, some more than others. So let's see. I'm reading these guys. So if I'm not looking at the camera in your Facebook Live in this right now, it's just because I'm reading these and I want to make sure I get it right. You spoke about Jen being the inspiration for Lady Serena. How did she react to the news, and has she read the books? Yes, I did talk to Jen first. I didn't just put her in and then tell her like later, like, surprise, here you go. I did tell Jen that she was the inspiration for Lady Serena because there is a chapter, Girl Talk, in Locked Out of Heaven that is straight from something we've done and things like that. And I let her know, and Jen was Jen. She was awesome about it. You know, there were some things she said, hey, can we leave this part out? But no, she was great. She's read the books, super supportive. You know, she's one of the best people on the planet as far as I'm concerned. She can do no wrong in my eyes. I often joke, Jen would, you know, I could be burning something down because of mistake. She'd have pom-poms out and be like, you're doing so great. This is so good. We'll totally talk about this later on what you did wrong. But for right now, because if I thought it was awesome happening, she'd be like, this is great. Totally good. And then afterwards, she'd be like, all right, girl, look, we got to talk. And in front of everybody, I could be like, Jen, the sky's purple. She'd be like, yes, it is. It's completely purple. Behind closed doors, she'd be like, what are you smoking? But she wouldn't do that in front of anybody. She's that kind of girl. She's been like that since high school, middle school. We, you know, the whole thing. So yeah, she was absolutely thrilled with it. Next question. You mentioned you are part Puerto Rican. Do you speak Spanish? If you don't, Jenny Ortega mentions feeling fake because she doesn't. What are your thoughts? And do you have Latin representation in your books from Bronx Babe? Oh, Bronx Babe, this is a loaded question, honey bunch. Okay, let's take this piece by piece. No, I don't speak Spanish. I tried. And I took it in high school. Actually, I took it in middle school. Yes, I took it in middle school. And I went to go speak to my grandmother, and my grandmother slapped me and said, don't speak that. That's not Spanish. And I stopped right after that. I don't really speak Spanish. I can understand it. I've been cursed at a lot in Spanish. And behind my mother's back, my grandmother used to teach me curse words because when I would walk down to the little bodega by her house, guys would say stuff to me who sat outside. And when my mother wasn't around, like I'd come home and tell my grandmother. And my grandmother started teaching me what to say back to them, which I cannot repeat on air. And so I learned the naughty words. My grandmother never spoke Spanish around us, but she would like pull me aside and be like, okay, this is what you're going to say the next time they said it. And she would get mad. And my grandmother wasn't like that, but she'd get every now and then, you know, this is what you say back. And I wouldn't. I had no idea what I was saying until much later. I can understand it. But no, I don't really speak it very broken, very little bit. Just like I speak broken Italian, I kind of had to even out half and half, a little bit of that. As for Jenny Ortega, I did read something about her saying that she felt or she got backlash because she kind of identifies and she feels, you know, because she doesn't, people expect her to. And they don't feel like she's representing properly. I can't say one way or the other. I can't speak about that. I don't feel fake. I've gotten backlash, though. I have gotten at jobs that I've worked on. Yes. I remember one in particular. I'll probably tell this story in an episode at another time. Yes, I have gotten, I have had people call me names because they feel I don't look it. And then when they find out I do and I'm not speaking Spanish, you know, I've been called some very nasty names over it. And it's been hard at times because I do want to know more about it. And I wasn't brought up to be proud of the culture. And so I do try to give some representation in volume two. Morgan is Puerto Rican. She's half Puerto Rican, half Italian. She's very proud of it. And so I do try to give a little more to it. But I wouldn't say I'm, you know, waving a flag or anything because I also don't want to be disrespectful on something I don't know enough of. But I will never say I'm not. I hope that makes sense. But, you know, I do want to have more representation in the books, and I try to be diverse because I do feel it's important. Let's see. You talked about other people inspiring the villains in the books. Do they know, and do you tell people when they inspire the villains, and have they ever contacted you? Inquiring Minds NYC. Let's see. Do they know? I don't think they know. I'm not sure. No one's ever contacted me and been like, hey, is this me? I've never had that happen. I've made it very clear about Mr. Bishop. I don't think he cares about me or like has looked me up. I really don't think I make an impact in his life. So I don't think so. If somebody sent an interview to him and was like, Danielle still doesn't like you and you're the bishops in her book, I think he would probably, he's got such a big ego, he'd probably be flattered in some way and be like, look, she's still thinking of me. I don't know. But no one's ever asked me, hey, is this me? My feeling is if you think it's you, it probably is. Even though, you know, all of these are based on fictional people and, it's, you know, any resemblance is purely coincidental. I've got to say the disclaimer. Nobody's ever contacted me and said, is this me? I mean, it's a pretty gutsy move. And I'd have a discussion if it was. But no, no one's ever contacted me. But I'd like to see what happens with that. How do you deal with bad reviews? Do you read them, Paula? Sometimes I deal better than some days with them. Some days it doesn't bother me. Other days it upsets me and it makes me so angry. And here's why. Oh, you're going to get a rant, guys. Bad reviews. Okay. I don't mind if you don't like the book because every book is not for everybody. And I don't care. Any author who says their book is for everybody, BS. What I don't like are the 1 to 2 star reviews where somebody goes, it just wasn't for me. And that's it. Okay, that's not a 1-star review. A 1-star review is like a book that should never have been printed. Or it's so offensive that it's like, oh my gosh, this is telling you to kill mankind. You know, or it's hateful. That's a 1-star review. A 2-star review is like there's so many errors in it. Once again, shouldn't be printed, but maybe there was a glimmer of something. 2-star review. Not, it's just not for me. No, that's not. And I've gotten reviews like that where I think I just had a review, a 2-star review where somebody was mad because they got a different cover than what was on Goodreads. I don't control Goodreads. If Goodreads wants to put out every cover I've ever done, that's what they're going to do. You write a review on whatever cover is up. If you want to go search for the right cover, not, I don't know. But they were mad and they actually put emojis and everything next to it because they had a different cover than what was up there. I can't help you. So if you feel that's a 2-star review, okay. They hadn't even finished the book. They were just like, I just can't get immersed in the world. And they're still complaining about the cover, not a 2-star review. Those are the reviews I can't stand. If you don't like the book, no problem. We move on. It's cool. Somebody else will. I'm fine with it. Other days, like I said, I'm like, eh, moving on. But those are the reviews that kind of stick to me. When it's just like me and there's nothing else to go with. Eh, but we all have to get over it. You know how it goes. Let's see. You mentioned being published in something medical. Have you been published before, Elaine? Okay, Elaine, here's the deal. And I have never mentioned this in an interview yet. Yes, I was published medically. My paper on MS, I had a hypothesis that was published while I was in nursing school right when I got out. But I look around. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. I had a book deal. I had a book deal before nursing school. It was a nonfiction offer to do a fashion book when I was in fashion called Running with Scissors. And it was my rules of fashion. I got as far as the chapters, the forward, and I think chapter one. And the publisher went under. So I've written, but to me, nonfiction is very different. I've written for magazines. I wrote the story about when I was locked out of my own wedding for a bridal magazine. And I used to be known by the moniker DQ and give fashion advice to some magazines out west. But fiction, no. This is the first time. So I was published, but I wasn't. It's kind of a little different. Let's see. Have you ever heard from anyone in high school after you were published? Dylan, Philly. Dylan, no, I have not. After the first book came out, Locked Out of Heaven, the first edition, I know Jen was contacted by a couple people. But no one has reached out to me personally and said, oh, I heard you have a book or anything like that. No, it's been ride or die with Jen pretty much. That's it. She hears from people. I really don't. So it's kind of funny like that. They'll go to her, but not me. Let's see. I heard it in an interview. You mentioned how you came up with your dragons, but you couldn't elaborate on it. Will you do a full episode on them? Fairy girl in New Jersey. Well, first of all, thank you for listening to other interviews. I appreciate that. Yes, I will definitely do an episode on the dragons because no, I never get to fully go into how they came to be. So I will definitely be doing another, I'll do an episode on the dragons. You mentioned being in fashion, but haven't done an episode on it. Will you? Yes. Yeah, I will probably do something on jobs before. And because I did write with fashion, I will probably do something like that. You talked about your time on the tournament scene. Will you do it again? Pilsung 58. Pilsung means victory in Korean. See, I do remember that from Taekwondo. Yeah, I will probably tell. I have two stories. My first tournament and then a tournament when I was judged by Michael Jai White. Spawn. That's how I know him. I know people know him for other things, but to me, he will always be Spawn. I was judged by him right after Spawn. He actually showed up at a tournament and surprised us. That was the first time I won Grand Champion. So I will definitely probably tell some of those stories. What are your goals for the series? Anime. I want a cartoon really badly, like a Castlevania-style dark animation series. That's what I want. Most people are like, I want Game of Thrones. No, I don't want to see this live action. I want some good animation. That's what I would really love. It's a little violent and my dragons would cost way too much money. So that's what I would love to see it. Do I miss nursing? No. I don't miss working holidays. And I worked every holiday, Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve. Like right now, I would technically be working. No, I don't miss it. I really don't. I was on my feet all day. I was bent over. No, sticking people. I hated being the ones like to hurt people sometimes. It was fun. It was rewarding at times, but no, I really don't miss it. Nope. Nope. Not at all. Has anyone famous read any of your books? Go Big Blue. Nice. Go Big Blue New York. I like that. Let's see. I have had a couple people, actually. Dawn Lewis from A Different World. I got a beautiful note from her after she did. She has read it. She has been a proponent of the series being made into an animated special, which is really awesome. Jim Steranko has the books. Chris Claremont has the books. David Mack has them. Let me think. Stephanie Williams, who is one of my favorite comic book writers right now. She does Nubia. It's amazing. She has read it. She read Locked Out of Heaven, and then she wrote the foreword to Volume 2 for A Fool's Journey, Birth of a Succubus. That's the first book. She actually has read it, and she got to read Birth of a Succubus. She has read it. So I've had a couple people read them. That's been really, really cool to hear other creative people who have gotten where I want to be read them. And that's been great to hear their feedback, or even for them to just ask for them. Like David Mack and I went back and forth on Instagram, and I bought his latest art book. I got his latest art book, and he was like, next time we're at a con, bring me yours. So when I was at New York Comic Con, I gave him mine, and it was great for him and I to sit and talk. Steranko, I've known Steranko, I think 2 or 3 years now. So it's nice when people that you look up to like your stuff. Claremont jokes, he's like, all your books are stacked up on my nightstand, you know, and to know that you're on like Chris Claremont's nightstand, it's just like, you're like, oh my gosh. You know, he's a legend. So things like that. Yeah, it's been really cool. You hope to hear from people. I know Robert Harris has read them. He was the guy who greenlit The Hunger Games. So to hear his feedback and say, this is where I think it could go. Moments like that, that's pretty cool. So I'm always kind of psyched with things like that. And we'll see. It says, okay, since you are a confessed comic book geek, do you want to see your books as a comic book? I would love to see a graphic novel. Yes. And as I've said, I've talked to Mike Lilly from DC Marvel. He's a phenomenal artist. We're working possibly together. Akira, I've worked with to edit. So I'd like to see something like that happen. Definitely. I always saw it like that. Even when I first wrote the book, I thought this would make a better graphic novel. So it was always kind of skewed or headed in that direction. And I thought maybe it would go there, but I wasn't 100% sure. And I didn't have an artist at the time. So even when I had some interest from people, and I remember meeting with one group, and I can't say their name right now because we're talking off and on, they were just starting. And they had a very little table at New York Comic Con years ago before Locked Out of Heaven came out. And I remember talking to them, and now they're huge and they're doing deals with like big people. But when I spoke to them, they were like, oh, this is a great idea. Who's your artist? And I was like, yeah, I don't have one. And they were like, come back to us when you have an artist. And now we're talking. So that's kind of cool, but we'll see. It's definitely something I'd like to do. And I'd like to see it go there. Does your myasthenia ever affect your writing, and will you ever write about it? Myasthenia gravis affects everything. It affects daily life. You know, when you Google it and it says, 80% of people like live a normal life and it's fine. And your life is never normal after you're diagnosed with myasthenia gravis. It affects my writing in the sense that if I'm in a flare and I have double vision, writing becomes a little more difficult. My only vision is down. If I look straight down, I'm fine. I have no double vision. But my hands now can kind of get a little tired. So if I'm handwriting, it becomes difficult. And sometimes I just get tired. Will I write about it? I don't know if I'll ever write a character with myasthenia. Being that I do fantasy, I don't want there to be just some magic cure, because there is no cure. It's very hard. So I don't know if I would do that necessarily. Would I write about my life with it in a very personal nonfiction way? Maybe. I'm still coming to grips with it. So I can't see the forest through the trees just yet. Taking a step and just doing this show and being public with everything is my first jump. Beyond that, we'll see. Talking about it is kind of the first thing. You know what I mean? We kind of have to see where we go from there. I'm not sure. Have you ever met any of your literary heroes? Nerdy Guy 55 Philly. I've met Chris Claremont, Jim Steranko, Stephanie Williams, who I adore. Those have been the major people that I've met that I really, really, really look up to. David Mack, I've met, like I said, those are the guys that I've met that I just think are wonderful people. Linda Carter is just a hero in general, and I've only seen her from a distance. Like I said, I haven't met her. I don't know if I'm allowed to meet her. I don't know if there's, you know, like my picture's up somewhere and they're like, don't let her too close. I don't know. But past that, I don't know who I'd really want to meet right now. I do love Kim Harrison, but the reason I love Kim Harrison, I do love her writing, but her audiobooks are what sold me, and it was Marguerite Gavin, her narrator. She's the one that kind of sold me on the books. She's phenomenal. If you want to get into Kim Harrison's books, go to the audio, because Marguerite grabs you from the moment that whole thing starts. That would probably be my biggest thing. Kim Harrison would probably be in there. But let's get into the writer's tip for today, because I know you guys have family, you got things you want to do, so I don't want to keep you much longer. Great stories often start with a great question, whether it's a what if, the character's internal struggle, a mystery to unravel, or just what about themselves? What's making them do something? Those are all the foundations for storytelling. So as you write, challenge yourself to ask the whys of your character, what they fear, how they'll overcome their obstacles, because answering these questions adds depth, and that keeps your readers hooked. So always go back to the who, what, where, when, and put that into your character. That will give you your flaws, but it'll help go from there. Before we close this chapter, here's something to consider. What's a question about yourself and your journey that you've been avoiding? Maybe it's time to answer it, because the truth is always out there. It's just waiting for you to discover it. For everybody who celebrates the holidays, have a wonderful holiday. And if you have more questions, you can hit me up on Instagram at DM Orsino, author, and let me know. There's more questions I'll answer, and I'll definitely do another episode like this. Until then, have a wonderful, wonderful holiday season. I will be back. Thank you so much.